Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, head football coach, Oregon State. He's a husband. He's a father of a baseball player. He's a Dodger fan. I don't know how I feel about that. Jonathan Smith joining us. Congratulations on your...
I feel great about it, man. You beat Cody Bellinger last night, game 5 in San Francisco. You feel great about it.
I wanted your Dodgers swept. Is that just bitter Giants fan in me or what?
Well, it's trending that way, man. I don't know if you saw the end of it there. Man, 8th inning, down, Cody.
What did you think about the Dodger-Giants series ending on that check swing call?
You know, I think it's baseball. I do think it was a great series, a great game. You know, there's going to be some calls that are tight one way or the other. I actually think middle of the season, Dodgers-Giants, I think there was a check swing that should have been called that the Dodgers didn't get. It actually ended up, they lost the game there, and shoot, the whole thing came down to a separation of one game.
I feel like, for me, it was like great series. I'm pretty sure Scherzer was going to strike him out anyway, but I would rather have Scherzer like paint the black, umpire call strike three than that check swing thing. You know what I mean? It's like
I'd agree with that. Yep, yeah. I would agree with that. So something like that. And I'll say this: you just never know. One pitch, you never know. I mean, even yesterday, Cody's down two strikes and high fastball and whatever. But
cracked
it. All
right, let's talk a little bit about football here. You get Utah; they are off an emotional win over Arizona State. What did you see in that game? Because they looked a lot different to me than they did early in the season.
Yeah, they look good. I mean, especially they dominated the second half of that game, 28-0 in the second half. Both sides of the ball played well, physical, quarterbacks playing with a bunch of confidence. You know, and they're coming on a nice winning streak here. You know, finding ways to win the last three, undefeated in the conference. It's a team with, like I say, playing with confidence and playing really well.
They didn't look very physical early on, like San Diego State, BYU. I didn't see that normal Utah physical point of attack, offensive, defensive line, but they did against Arizona State. What is different?
You know, I think each team, you know, improves, establishes more and more of their identity as the season goes on. You know, I think they've got some guys that are a little bit younger playing in some spots, and that's always going to, development's going to take place. And Coach Winningham, Kyle's been doing that for a long time. Every team, I think, wants to be playing their best ball at the end of the year because of that development and improvement, and I think that's where Utah's at right now.
Jonathan Smith is with us, Oregon State football coach. You got a chance on a bye week. What area do you think you guys got better in, or where was the point of focus for you guys this last week?
Well, you know, it's kind of spread out. We got 10 coaches on the road. Some of them, emphasis on one stop would be underclassmen, you know, seeing them play or getting information, and others making stops, seeing some of our committed guys play. So it's kind of across the board. You know, we're definitely not done with this current recruiting class, and we still like to chase some DBs, O-linemen, but ultimately any player that we feel like is going to make us better, we're still trying to shore all that up.
How different were those conversations? Or, you know, we're not on the road. I've never recruited a kid or talked to parents. Are you getting in living rooms of more talented players? Are the conversations now different that you guys find yourself competing at the top of the North Division?
You know, this time of year, you know, you get all these NCAA rules. We definitely weren't in living rooms because it couldn't do it. But with definitely the reception, people are taking notice of, you know, some success and wins, and, you know, guys on our team playing well statistically, this and that. And so we feel good that we're continuing to progress, continuing to, you know, be able to sell a place and a program and people that's very attractive.
It was a big deal. My brother is a teacher and a coach down in California at Clovis High School, and in that area there, and he says, "Hey, Oregon State's on campus today." And that was a lot of buzz, man. Do you remember in high school when a college would come to your high school?
Oh yeah, totally. I remember when a couple of local schools would come through, and you're talking about Coach Waz, who's down there.
Yeah,
Central California, and whatnot, and it is cool. It was so nice just to get back into the schools because we hadn't been able to do it. You know, through last season and whatnot. It was really the first time for me to get out and about and talk to coaches and see some games. Always, high school games are fun now.
Yeah.
Especially when you got the little bit of student section, you got the band going. It's a bunch of fun to be there in person.
You got to get a pepper steak sandwich and settle in and watch a high school game. You know, come on. How do you divvy up the recruiting territory? Is it geography driven? Like a coach is familiar with an area, or do you send your tight end coach to go see a great tight end, or how do you divvy that up?
Yeah, it's interesting. We actually try to do both, and so each position coach has a specific area that they're responsible to be in the know on what players are at in schools and knowing the high school coaches. At the same time, they're responsible for signing whatever the number is of guys to their position, and they need to go see them too. And so we had a mix of both going on this bye week. Some guys were in their area for a day and then took off to go see their position player somewhere else. And so we tried to accomplish it that way, mostly on the West Coast, but shoot, we had some guys going to Texas and other outside the Pac-12 footprint.
The offense, the passing game in particular, last couple of games hasn't looked like it did when it was humming earlier in the year. What do you see on film? What do you work on with your receivers and your quarterback in the pass game?
Yeah, you know, we've been working at it. I think, just like I'm talking about programs, you know, week in and week out developing, we want to be doing that in the passing game, going back to our fundamentals. At the same time, you know, it's a good time to look at how people are attacking us. So early in the season, we put out some tape. We got some schemes that we've had some success with. Well, there's some good coaches in this league that are going to try to take that stuff away. And so it's always that chess match. As you get into the middle, end of the year, you got tendencies and things that are your go-tos. Well, defensively, you're going to try to take that away. So all of that mixed in, I think that showed up the last couple of weeks, and we're hopeful that we can be more productive, efficient in the pass game this Saturday.
The receivers in particular, I may be wrong here, but I felt like Washington and Washington State had some good DBs. And their defensive game plan may have just been, look, we need to commit a lot of resources to the run game. We are going to try to, as much as possible, go lock up these receivers and make them force us, make them beat us and make them cause separation. And your guys don't seem to be getting that separation. Am I reading that wrong, or a defense is just, you know, trying to put their athletes on your athletes and then, you know, because they have to be worried about the run game?
Yeah, you know, I think that's part. On some snaps, we could separate some more because it wasn't 100% on those defenses we were playing that they were just going man on the outside and trying to stop the run, because ultimately we were still able to produce in the run game the last 2 weeks. So separation, timing, and accuracy, tight misses here or there. And then you are looking at a smaller sample size just because the amount of times we're throwing the ball.
You're going to get a good crowd again this week. There's a lot of buzz about the game. Utah's good. You guys are good. This is the kind of game I got to think as a coach that you sign on to take. Like, this is a great challenge.
Yeah, I know our guys are excited about it. I hope we have a great crowd, and I know our student section will start the thing off because these are, you talk about coaches, but also our players too. This is what you want to play in great atmospheres, college football at home, big time opponent, a decent kickoff hour. You know, all of that put into one. Actually, hoping for a little bit of weather. We feel like that's to our advantage because we see it quite a bit, and it should be fun.
Yeah, that's interesting because most quarterbacks want the field dry. You're all right with it being a little wet.
Well, I'm looking from a team standpoint, and look, in Utah they get weather too, so I don't know how much advantage that is. I know this: if it's going to affect the crowd at all, then yeah, I'd like it to be really nice so we get more and more people in the seats.
All right, Jonathan Smith is with us. I want to ask you about sort of the conference as a whole. How much do you pay attention to what this conference is doing outside of you guys? Or, you know, you can't control any of that. Do you buy into the philosophy of, like not worrying about what I can't control?
Yeah, I definitely don't worry about it. I do think there's some benefit to being aware of what's going on in the conference, opportunity to learn or adjust. And, you know, some of that specifically, I'm talking about football. So I do watch other opponents and games if we're not playing them that week, because you can pick up a cool play or how someone adjusted or the game time decisions. I think the same thing takes place in recruiting. You know, word of mouth and how others are doing recruiting well or not so well. And so you try to have some awareness, but ultimately I don't control it, so we don't dwell on it. I'm just trying to pick up advantages when I can.
Kyle Whittingham said that, you know, if you don't show up to play in this conference, there's no dominant team. He says you get your ass beat if you don't show up to play. Is that why we see, Oregon beats Stanford, Stanford loses to Washington State, USC pounds Washington State, like Stanford beat, you know, it doesn't make any sense week to week. Is that why you think? Is it just there's parity here, and if you don't bring your A game, you lose?
Yeah, I do think he's totally on it. I'd almost go now, experiencing this season, almost another layer is if you don't show up in the second half. I mean, all these games come down to the wire, and it's like who can finish the best in the fourth quarter. Because, you know, momentum swings, scores changing, you know, it takes place a ton. You got to be able to play well and finish, or you're gonna get beat.
Bruce Barnum at Portland State ran a reverse flea flicker in his opening drive. I thought about you because you would have loved it. It was like watching a playground football play, and they got a guy wide open for an easy touchdown. What does that do to a team when you practice all week? You know, as you've been on both sides of this, probably as a coach, you practice all week, you prepare all week, and then you know either you or the opposition pulls out a trick play and beats you in a way that you can't see coming. Is that a psychological blow in addition to the 7 points?
I think when you're on the successful side of it, when it hits, I think there's a little momentum. Guys have a bunch of fun with it, and you're always trying to create explosive plays. I think on the flip side, when you're on defense and if a trick play hits, that one's a little bit easier to overcome because it was like a trick play. It wasn't like something that we just flat out got beat that we should be able to handle. So I think that's cool. I'm actually, you saying that, I'm going to pull that film up and find that play, see if it's something we can put in.
He just ran a little toss to his running back who pitched it to the receiver who was coming the other way, who tossed it back to the quarterback who was now standing about 10 yards deep in the backfield and hit a wide open receiver streaking down the sideline, who had pretended to block and then released. It was a thing of beauty. And his sideline in particular went nuts because it was like kids love those plays, don't they?
Oh, they do. And they like practicing. And then because some of those plays you practice for a long time, like 2, 3, 4 weeks before you actually get a situation where you call it. And so sometimes there's a longer buildup of the play. I've been around that where we installed, I don't know, trick play like week 2 and didn't finally call it until like week 8. And then when it hits, it's even better.
Is it true that, like, okay, so you've done a few of these things. Like, you ran the fake punt against Washington State, even though you're not successful there. Are you giving Utah one more thing they have to worry about, or is that overblown?
No, I think there's something to that. I mean, anytime we're preparing, you know, you're going back on guys' video, especially teams, offense, defense, and if they put it on tape, you got to prepare for it. And so that there's some benefit to running a fake punt.
Yeah, and coaches get paranoid too, because I think a lot of coaches have said, they're worried about reporters at practice, other stuff like that. How much do you get caught up into that, or how much do you have to worry about like getting eyes on something you're working on? Because I wouldn't show anybody. I would practice at night and not let anybody see it.
Yeah, I do feel that way. I mean, again, there's this balance. You're trying to have exposure for your program and people following it and this and that. At the same time, as you get closer to games, the less eyes, the better. Technology now, I mean, it's so simple for a guy to pull out a phone and show something, whether it's schematically or a guy that's injured or not practicing or, you know, any of it. So I'm a little paranoid.
I think it comes with it. Jonathan Smith, good luck to you on Saturday. A lot of enthusiasm. You deserve a lot of credit because I think, you know, I remember when you first came on the show, you were just talking about being competitive in games, and now this is a big, big game for you guys. Two really good teams, a lot of eyes on it. I mean, it's everything that you sell to kids when you're recruiting them.
Yeah, no question. You want to play in these type of games, and obviously you're trying to play well and win it. But we've set ourselves up for these opportunities this back half of the season, and this is our first one. We want to go after it.
All right, good luck to you. Wish you the best. I'll see you down the road. Thanks, Coach.
Yep. Thanks, John.
All right, there's Jonathan Smith, Oregon State coach, and I mean that. Like, give, like, take a pause here. After six games, they're 4-2. They probably want the Purdue game back. Might have been a winnable game. Felt like they could have won that game. Would have been a tough win, but it was a game that if they play just a little better on the offensive side of the ball, Oregon State probably wins that game, or they're right there. You also look at the Washington State game. Very close to tying that game at the end. Felt like they made some weird decisions on the offensive drive. They're probably kicking themselves, too, for calling so many passes on that last drive. But those are the losses that Oregon State has suffered this year. That is in stark comparison to Jonathan Smith's first year, where they were hardly competitive in a lot of games. And there were a lot of days at the stadium where fans showed up and, you know, may have had hope or enthusiasm in their hearts, but just wasn't there. And you didn't have much to root for. And I'll be honest, because I bounce between Oregon and Oregon State mostly during the college football season, early in Jonathan Smith's tenure, I was watching one or two games a year because they weren't as relevant as the Ducks, who were, you know, fighting for bowl position, fighting for a conference championship. Now I find myself on a week-to-week basis having to literally look at the opponent, look at the stakes, and consult with some other people and go, okay, which of these two games should I be at? Now, it wasn't a no-brainer that, you know, you've got Chip Kelly and UCLA for Oregon on the road. You got Utah and Kyle Whittingham for Oregon State at home. Both Oregon and Oregon State are going to have to play well to win these games. For people who are looking at the Ducks and the Beavers and going, okay, as an entity, how's our state going? It was great. Like, the first half of this season, Oregon and Oregon State, you can make an argument for that tandem of Oregon and Oregon State being a better 1-2 punch than anybody in the conference. Like, we won. The state of Oregon won the first half of the Pac-12 season. You know, forget the South Division. USC was a dumpster fire. So you can't say USC and UCLA were better than Oregon and Oregon State. You know, Arizona was horrible. Couldn't get to 20 points. You can't say Arizona State and Arizona were better than Oregon and Oregon State. Washington and Washington State, don't even get me started. We started the show talking about one of them doesn't even have their coach anymore. So it's not Washington and Washington State. It's not Colorado and Utah. Colorado not good. Utah started slow. The best story in the conference, the best 1-2 punch, are the Ducks and the Beavers. But they have games this weekend and the start of what is unofficially the second half of the college football season. They've got games this weekend that are really hard football games. It's going to be really hard for Oregon to go to UCLA on the road and win against a team that is got some really good football in it and can run the ball. It's going to be a big challenge for Mario Cristobal and his staff and that team. They win that game, that is a quality win. If Oregon wins that game, I don't care if they win it ugly, that is a quality win. Beating Chip Kelly and beating UCLA at this juncture of this season, given everything that we have seen, given all the boos at Autzen Stadium, all the cries for Tyler Thompson, you know, it's Ty Thompson, it would be a huge win. And for Oregon State, this is the one. Okay, you really want to believe in them. They beat Washington. You want to believe in them. You see them and you go, gosh, they've got four wins. They look like a different team, playing with different confidence. This is Utah. This is a team now sitting in the driver's seat in the South Division. This is a team in Utah that a lot of people are penciling into the Pac-12 championship game now, lightly penciling them in. But they are on the road in the wake of an emotional victory last week over Arizona State, dominating second half. And will they be able to maintain that emotion? Or are they going to fall flat this week? Physically, can Oregon State continue to run the ball against a Utah team that is very well coached on the defensive side of the ball and is known for its defensive line being physical? Their front seven at Utah, year in and year out, you could argue the most consistent, best front seven on the defensive side of the ball in the conference. Both Oregon and Oregon State are going to have to play well to win. There is nothing like this is about winning this week. And these are true challenges. And for people who sat through 28 years of no bowl game at Oregon State, or remember going to Autzen Stadium when nobody else did, this is making it. We've got two great games this week, two teams that are playing at the top of the North Division, and I said it weeks ago, I'm going to say it again, I'm doubling down. That game between Oregon and Oregon State, I believe, will determine who goes to the Pac-12 championship game. I think that that game is going to have massive implications, and this is part of it this weekend coming up. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide. Give a shout out to my friends at the Reserve Golf Course. I know it's one of those Oregon days in October, but man, thinking about those sunny, sunny days in the spring and the summer. BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament out at the Reserve Golf Course. Shout out to the Reserve. Thinking about you on this kind of rainy day. It's raining earlier this morning. We're going to play Punch It Audio in the 1 o'clock hour. We're going to hear from Ben Bulch of the LA Times, who will join us as well to talk about what the heck is going on in the world of UCLA football. But first,
we interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.